My name is Christopher Biddle. I'm here with my co-host Chris Rourke. Hello, Chris, yet again.
Hello, Christopher.
And now we are joined by Ian Havlick, who is the outreach director for the Crested Butte Avalanche Center. And Ian, I want to double check that I'm getting your title correct there. Outreach director.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, thanks for being with us.
Coordinator, director. Yeah, no, thank you. Really appreciate the time, and hopefully more to come this season, checking in through KBUT and informing our community of what matters.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to start out with, you know, we're going to have a lot of different folks listening to this. Of course, some that are going to be more experienced than others. But for folks who don't know, can you please briefly describe the work that the Crested Butte Avalanche Center, which you may hear us refer to as CBAC, what do you do as an organization?
Yeah, so we are a nonprofit. We've been around since the early 90s. Started in a basement, and we've just grown from there. And we basically issue public avalanche advisories daily from November around Thanksgiving, whenever the snow starts sticking, to middle of April when the snow starts melting away. And we produce daily advisories that you can check on our website, cbavalanchecenter.org. We broadcast it on KBUT every morning at 8 a.m. And we share that all through social media and our website as well. So, yeah, we try to get the word out as best we can. And we're not just an organization centered on skiers, but also snowmobilers and snowshoers and Nordic skiers, or anyone traveling in and around steep terrain in our county, basically.
Sure. And one thing that I always think is worth pointing out, that the Crested Butte Avalanche Center is unique in that I don't know of any other community in Colorado that has something like the Crested Butte Avalanche Center. Of course, there is what the state does, the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. I'm glad that I recalled that perfectly. Nice. But, of course, you know, they're working oftentimes a lot more on keeping highways open. And, you know, the Crested Butte Avalanche Center tends to be working, and correct me if I'm wrong, but more for users of the backcountry.
Yeah, you nailed that. So, you know, we're very unique in that we're community run, community supported. We can't do it without donations throughout the season at our various events. And we receive no governmental funding whatsoever. So we're the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. We have a very close relationship with. Their forecast areas are much larger. So if we have a storm that hits the Irwin area and drops 2 feet of snow, and town gets, say, 3 inches, the CAIC would have to issue an advisory with a much broader message, where the CBAC can say, hey, you know, watch out going over here, go to the west or northern portion of our forecast area, the Slate River drainage or the Irwin area, where, you know, if you go Cement Creek or Brush Creek, you know, it's much safer, let's say,
sure,
in that hypothetical situation. So, yeah.
Sure. Chris Rourke, do you have a question for our guest, Ian Havlick?
Yeah, I do. Ian, so I'm not a backcountry skier, and I don't really snowmobile in the backcountry. I kind of stick close to town, but I have reported on some avalanches, and what has impressed me is the immense power in them and how very dangerous they are. Tell us why they are so dangerous, and really how they get triggered. And I'm sure you're going to address my favorite word, slabs, in this explanation. Slabs.
Yes, the slab avalanche. So what's unique about Crested Butte and a lot of mountain communities in Colorado is that, you know, you take a stroll with your dog just outside the city limits or just outside the sidewalk, and you're in avalanche terrain potentially, you know, namely around Crested Butte. The Nordic Center Hill is a big one, and the Crested Butte Avalanche Center works in coordination with the town of Crested Butte to manage that hazard throughout the winter. But yeah, these slabs are the most dangerous avalanche that backcountry travelers or even just urban dwellers in a mountain environment encounter. And those form from different storms creating different layers in the snowpack, as well as long dry periods where that snow transforms and becomes more sugary. And as soon as that next storm falls on that more sugary snow, you get your slab avalanche. And that is what is most unpredictable. And that's really what we focus on at the Crested Butte Avalanche Center in warning and advising users about that particular avalanche problem. But it's not just slab avalanches. There's 9 different types of avalanches that a backcountry traveler can encounter. And we try to educate our users through checking the Avi Center website of what they're most likely to encounter on any given day. So
let me just interrupt you as a novice reading that. I love your website. It is, nice. It really makes it very clear for somebody who doesn't even really understand a whole lot of it. You really break it down into very simple graphics and give information that's very easy to understand.
Yeah, our aim is to issue a forecast any given day that can satisfy and educate a basic user as well as our more advanced veteran backcountry travelers. So I think we strike a pretty good balance in doing that, which also makes us unique from other more generic governmental run agencies. No knocks on that, but they just have to produce a forecast that we can't quite customize as easily as we can.
So you have a more limited use of adjectives and verbs. I've seen some great adjectives and verbs show up in the Crested Butte Avalanche Center daily reports. And I would say the same thing about the audio version that we air 8 a.m. In the mornings once the winter really gets going here. You don't really need to know a whole lot about avalanche science to fully understand what it is you guys are talking about. And, of course, it's great to get the meteorological point of view as well because we get a weather forecast. So we are looking forward to starting those back up again soon.
Yeah, we are as well. We're busy planning, and we're excited to get some snow on the ground and start doing our thing.
Well, as someone who studies avalanche science and is aware of their potential, you know, you touched upon a couple of things, but what do you want the general public to know?
At the most basic level, you know, getting our name out and just making it clear that we are a free resource and to check our website, listen to KBUT, of course. This information is out there and it's easily digestible. And the goal is to reach as many people and users as possible. So if your buddy you meet at the trailhead hasn't listened or checked the forecast, share that with them. You know, I get sick to my stomach when users from out of town, we get a lot of, you know, Midwestern snowmobilers that know our terrain is so good to ride. They come out and they don't know the Avi Center exists. And that was a fatality. That was the case a few years back in 2014 on the Kebler Pass corridor. It was a high danger day. It was a day we could have potentially given that critical information to those users. And unfortunately that wasn't the case. So from that moment on, it's like, okay, you know, at least personally, and I know I speak on behalf of the whole Avi Center, like that is what drives us. And so at a basic level, know that we exist. And then beyond that, know that there's more in-depth avalanche courses you can take from various local providers that can just enhance that lifelong learning curve. And I think, you know, living in the mountains, we all should have some amount of knowledge, even if we never get into any steep terrain. Just knowing where they may live is key. Yeah.
It's great.
So, Ian, this is something that we've actually talked about for a couple of years now, the increase in users in the backcountry, specifically here in Crested Butte and the Gunnison area, but worldwide really as well. We've seen an increase in this sport in popularity really in the past 7 to 10 years, I would say. Can you kind of explain the evolution of that? As I understand it, it has a lot to do with the gear available for backcountry skiers.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Christopher. You know, and this is a long chat we could have that happens around beers regularly among, you know, just users as well as avalanche professionals. But what is the root cause of this? And I think the availability and cost of gear, you know, how much lighter it's gotten, how much relatively cheaper it's gotten, those are big players in the rise of popularity. I think social media has a big a hand in the rise in popularity. I think the Warren Miller and Matchstick production, local Matchstick productions, ski movies have a big part of that, as well as just people being fitter and stronger and more curious, potentially than in years past. Snowmobile evolution is getting people deeper into the backcountry, lighter sleds, more powerful sleds. So, yeah, I think there's a variety of factors, but those are the big ones.
So, and as I said, we've seen that year over year, but really this year, in the era of COVID-19, really since the pandemic, I didn't fully realize this, that, you know, even in March, we started to see sales of backcountry gear soar. I understand that there's been a really big increase in the amount of people that are seeking avalanche safety courses. So this coming season, ahead of this coming season, where there's a big wave of new skiers anticipated, not only to come here, but just across Colorado and into the sport in general. How is the Crested Butte Avalanche Center talking about this? What's on your organization's collective mind when this issue comes up?
Yeah, so a couple things, and I'll get to that, what's on the CBAC's mind, what we have to work with and our tools, but just a few stats that I kind of called around to collect prior to tonight's interview. So I called the owner of the Colorado Mountain School out in the Front Range in Boulder and asked him, you know, just to try to get some numbers to this supposed spike in popularity, and he shared with me some pretty interesting numbers that as of last year this time, level one, which is the most basic avalanche course education level, level one enrollments were 210. As of today, his enrollments for the same level course are 800. And a small, you know, caveat to that is potentially it's not a true scientific number, like potentially the market's being pushed to book all these trips earlier in the season because everyone thinks there is going to be this pulse and all the courses might sell out. But, you know, if that's an accurate indicator, we have a big surge of users across Colorado to educate. And so the Crested Butte Avalanche Center, with the help of the Gunnison County Metropolitan Recreation District, as well as additional support from the town of Crested Butte and the store committee, have given the CBAC some money to work with as far as increasing our outreach efforts. And one of those things is just creating my position this year. So we'll be trying to do more trailhead days where we're physically present at various Crested Butte trailheads, Kebler Pass, Washington Gulch, Slate, and Snodgrass, as well as potentially Brush or Cement. But those trailheads get a little less use, so we'll focus our efforts more toward the popular Kebler Pass and Slate River corridors, I think, for the most part. So we'll be educating users as they head out. Hey, you know, you have the proper avalanche gear. Do you, you know, have you checked your buddies to make sure they're transmitting today? Oh, you know, and then when people return, hey, what'd you see out there? Any useful information to share with the forecasters is huge, because that can just improve our next day's forecast. We're going to be hosting a lot of fireside chats, and we're, you know, I've been tasked with trying to figure out how to do that in a socially responsible way with the pandemic. So I think you'll be hearing my voice on KBUT a little bit more. We're going to maybe play around with Zoom or call-in or webinar type events. We're going to be hosting a virtual avalanche awareness night on the 4th of December. That's a Friday, as well as the ever popular beacon brush up the next day on Saturday, December 5th. It's a totally free event. I think it's pretty cutting edge. I mean, I don't know of any other community that gives a free avalanche rescue specific day where you just show up, you schedule your time slot, and you can run through three or four avalanche scenarios with your posse, your crew, your wife, your husband, whoever you ski and ride with. And so those are some huge things, just to list a few that we're going to be trying to get the word out on.
You know, that sounds like really great work that you're doing, especially when you're expecting numbers like that. But the one thing that you can't prevent completely is eventuality. And I'm interested in how you work with search and rescue when we do have an eventual avalanche and there is a situation that, you know, requires a lot of attention.
Right. Yeah. And unfortunately that hit home, very close to home for a lot of us this spring. Mm-hmm. And you know, we have an incredible relationship with the Crested Butte Search and Rescue, as well as the Western, state search and rescue teams. Some of our forecasters are even on those two teams, so you can't get much better than that. So if and when an accident does happen, you know, we'll get the word out and we'll try to get one of our forecasters to the scene to assist, as well as, you know, analyze the hazard with the search teams potentially heading out. And then we'll also work, you know, very closely with the Colorado Avalanche Information Center forecasters to investigate if that is necessary with any avalanche incident. So, yeah, I mean, the community is in really good hands for those inevitable accidents. As hard as we try to avoid, they do happen. So, yeah.
Sure. And Ian, you're referring, of course, to the loss of a vibrant community member, as well as a friend of the station here at KBUT, Dan Escalante,
yeah,
who passed away sadly in the spring. And it was a huge impact to the community at a time that the community was struggling to begin with. And it was truly a tragic event. And we're very happy that the Crested Butte Avalanche Center is here to help prevent things like that from happening. And we appreciate that. I want to let folks know that they're listening to Community Matters. We're talking to Ian Havlick of the Crested Butte Avalanche Center. My name is Christopher Biddle. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Chris Rourke. You can call and join the conversation if you've got a question to ask Ian tonight. 970-349-7444. We do have operators standing by. 970-349-7444. Ian, I wanted to ask you about some news that's definitely been reverberating around the backcountry world. As of recently, we know we wanted to talk about it tonight, but recently there were two backcountry users. I don't want to say what they were using because I feel like that's what they say every time. They always have to mention that it was a border. two people that were given charges for setting off an avalanche first of all, tell us what exactly happened there. Well, you know, give us the details around that story.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, so I don't think it's anything to be ashamed of. Yeah, they're snowboarders, but just as many skiers do dumb stuff.
Sure,
as well,
I just think every time I see that headline, it always says two snowboarders instead of two backcountry users. I thought that was funny. But
no,
go
totally.
Ahead.
No, but so on the west side of Eisenhower Pass, so on the Frisco Summit County side, two snowboarders midwinter were descending just above the Eisenhower Tunnel, and they set off a small avalanche that then triggered a much larger avalanche as it ran, something we call like a step-down avalanche, and ended up scouring to the ground and depositing somewhere around 20 feet of snow on a closed service road just above the tunnel entrance. So there really wasn't any hazard of this slide actually going on to I-70 proper, Interstate 70. But it was a close call, and the slide did destroy some avalanche mitigation equipment that they use, these towers that are equipped with explosives when it's time to do avalanche mitigation to protect the road. And so these snowboarders that were descending were filming their descent, which is a very valuable tool for better or for worse, in the courtroom. And it captured them discussing the hazard and the snowpack, and they're carrying all the right avalanche rescue equipment. So the prosecutors are arguing, you know, they knew the risk. They knew that triggering an avalanche was possible above this roadway, but they chose to go anyway. And I guess I can understand that potential legal bend to it, but, you know, that's just standard protocol in the backcountry, you know? So that's kind of the controversy there. But it is potentially setting a pretty strong precedent, depending on the outcome, for future avalanche incidents, you know, in the public domain, whether it injures some other backcountry users or triggers another avalanche across a road. And the ramifications for something like this is pretty serious. As a backcountry community, it falls on all of us to be smart, be responsible, and have that bigger picture view of like what's around us and what could potentially happen in a worst case scenario. Because if you look up north to our Canadian neighbors on Rogers Pass, which is the Trans-Canada Highway that connects Golden, British Columbia to Revelstoke, they had similar incidents, and the Canadian government cracked down and permanently closed certain backcountry terrain to users to protect the highway. As well as, so long story short, this is a serious case that, you know, we should all be kind of paying attention to. Because we have Monarch Pass, we have Berthoud Pass, we have Red Mountain Pass, and we have Loveland, just to name a few roadways that are in nice backcountry terrain that ski and riders use a bunch. They get car bumps up, and I think we all need to, especially with more users in the backcountry this winter, take another second to decide, you know, could our line impact other users if we were to trigger an avalanche?
Are you concerned at all about the impact this would have on folks' willingness to post information about a triggered avalanche? Because I know that that's something that the Avalanche Center relies on a lot. Not only are your forecaster is putting out reports, but you're also depending on the community to submit their own reports and photos and videos, and, you know, breakdowns of avalanches that are triggered. Are people going to be scared to do that? You know, are they going to be getting in trouble?
Boy, that's a great question. I hope not, because I hope that, you know, it should be very clear that any observation submitted to the Avalanche Center, or any Avalanche Center for that matter, can be anonymous. So it's the information we care about. I don't care who it is or what the backstory is or any kind of drama. I just really want to know, you know, where the Avalanche was, you know, just the basic details. If that's all you provide, that is key information. You could potentially save a life. So I hope that these cases, they're fairly unfortunate, but it's kind of the state of affairs we live in today. It's unfortunate that that could be a ramification, and I just want to be clear to the listeners that any submission, any observation you share with us can be completely anonymous. And if the media starts knocking on our door, we will be sure to keep that tight.
Sure. So, Ian, in a moment here, we're going to be moving to our part of the conversation that we're going to include Roland Mason, who's been working on a project to improve winter trailhead at Kevlar Pass, which is one of the most popular areas for backcountry skiing. It's been an issue of bubbling for a long time. There's been a bit of a unique solution to the issue of overcrowding at the trailhead. But I'm wondering, you know, we're talking again about overcrowding and increase in numbers of people coming out there. Does the Crested Butte Avalanche Center work with entities like the Forest Service or the county to develop infrastructure, you know, that's not necessarily on the mountain, but, you know, adjacent to or, do you work with those groups at all?
Yeah. I would say that the relationship is growing more and more as each season goes by. At least in the time I've been here, which is 8 years, I think when I started, it was kind of a afterthought. And then after a few big winters, especially the 2018 winter, when you know, the co-op was needing our assistance and the county was wondering, you know, if certain places were safe. I think that's just helped grow our relationship. So yeah, we don't construct any infrastructure, but we advise as necessary that those entities, you know, require.